Morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the SCI meeting on the 7th of April at 1800 UTC. On the call today, we have Rudy Vansnick, Amar El-Sadr, Ann Aikman-Scalise, Sarah Bakke, Wolf Ulrich Nobin. We have apologies from Carol Douglas and Angie Graves. And from ICANN staff, we have myself, Julie Hedlund, and Mary Wong. I would like to remind you all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you. You may begin.
Sorry, you missed out Lawrence.
Oh, and Lawrence. My apologies.
Yes.
My apologies, Lawrence. Thank you. And Lawrence Alamala Roberts. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Michelle. I was just also wondering, I heard Lawrence coming in early in the call, so Lawrence, you're noted being present. So let's go through the agenda. We just went through the roll call. There is a question about, a regular question, are there any changes in the statement of interest that members of this committee need to mention? If not, we can move over to the third item on the agenda, which is the discussion about the process relating to motions and amendments that is covered by sub-team A and the recommendations that have been drafted over there. And I'm sorry I couldn't make it 2 weeks ago. It was really difficult here in Belgium with all these terrorist attacks going on. I think that we have a final proposal for the SCI to consider on the motion and amendments discussion. And I see Julia has put up on the screen the document. And you have your hand up, Julie. Yes, please, go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, Rudy. This is Julie Hedlund for the transcript. So the action item coming out of the Marrakesh meeting was that staff should go ahead and draft some language for the SCI to consider on submitting, seconding, and amending motions. And that's what you see in the Adobe Connect room. And I can go ahead and unsync the document. I'll note that we actually did not get a chance to discuss this at the last SCI meeting, so you didn't miss anything there, Rudy. And I did have a question both, you know, for you and for Anne, and that is I put this first in the I put the order that this is first in the order of the two items we're discussing, this and then the chair, vice chair elections, merely because it's now gone to the stage of draft language in the GNSO operating procedures. If you and Anne would prefer to go to chair, vice chair elections first, we can certainly do that. I'll just note that we did spend a fair amount of time discussing chair, vice chair elections last time. And I have those the proposed changes from that I can bring up as well. So I don't know if you want this first or not, but that is the status of this. This is the draft language that Mary and I have drafted, and it's a new section 3.3.3, submitting, seconding, and amending motions, and a subsection 3.3.3.1, submitting and seconding motions, and then 3.3.2 on amending motions. Thanks for that.
Thank you, Julie, really for the transcript. Well, if you have no objection, I would like to go through this one first in this order, as I think we have quite some clearance on the way forward, and the text is drafted for this one. Which is already pending for a while. And I think it would be good if we could at least have one finalized and see if we can have the second one, being the chair, vice chair elections, eventually done too. So, yes, Amar, I see you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Thanks, Reed. It's Amar. I don't recall the exact date, but I did mention in an email that I would like to discuss the amending motions part of this during a call. I think this was an email I sent prior to the March 25th call we had, and as Julie noted, we didn't actually get around to discussing this. I probably should have followed up on list, and I apologize for failing to do so. Am I the only person on the committee right now who feels that there is merit to the idea of a deadline to submitting amendments to or suggesting amendments to the motions? I would appreciate getting a feel for those on the call and hearing some more on this, but I can recall at least two times while I was on council that very late suggestions for amendments to motions were problematic and consumed a great deal of time, and there was quite a bit of debate on those two instances that I recall. One of them was on adopting a charter for a cross-committee working group on internet governance, and the second was on the motion to adopt the charter for the new utility subsequent procedures PDP. I was just wondering what others felt about this, and obviously the thinking is to go ahead and not suggest any deadlines to amendments, but I was wondering if there was anyone else besides myself who has any concerns on this. And when we started this exercise, I actually was hoping that we could suggest some sort of deadline to making amendments to motions. Doesn't have to be a very early one, maybe 48 hours or so, but that was just a thought I had, and I was hoping to hear from others. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amar. And indeed, we had this discussion at the early stage in the sub-team A on should there be deadlines, should there be a specific timing that we need to respect. And I think that it is important we have that discussion, because in what we have received on email the 31st of March, in point issue 3, should there be a deadline for motion to be seconded, that's already a question where we didn't have a final decision. And the issue 4, which is should there be a time limit deadline for submitting amendments, is still, we did discuss this and said we had no change to current process. But I would like to hear from other members, of course, for instance, Wolf Ulrich, who has also quite a lot of experience on the council, what they think about it. Anne, I see you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Rudy. It's Anne for the transcript. Unfortunately, I'm at a disadvantage because Lori has been our IPC representative on this sub-team. She must have had a problem over in Geneva and not participating, but it seems that based on past practice,
we have to change.
There have been issues. Lori, you're not on the phone, are you?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. Okay. Fantastic. Did you hear Amr's comment about a deadline for amendments?
Sorry?
Did you hear Amr's comment?
No, I just dialed in. I'm not in the U.S. I'm out of the U.S., and for some reason, I am having very bad luck connecting.
Oh, okay. Well, Lori, let me just repeat Amr's comment, because this is not my sub-team with respect to the motions and amendments, but Amr just raised the question whether, and I think it was discussed in your sub-team, there should be a deadline on the submission of amendments to motions, and I think he mentioned even the possibility of creating a 48-hour deadline, and I was about to observe, but I really do want to yield the floor to you that, you know, I have seen situations where amendments were introduced last minute, but sometimes they were, you know, that's been done in an effort to help the council to act and to move things forward and to reach compromises, and I think that some of those compromises are reached, particularly during meetings of ICANN. There seems to be a point where all the counselors get together the night before the council meeting and try to work out on what basis things are going to move forward. And so I thought, well, if that's the way it's working practically at this point in time, would it be a better remedy that an amendment that's introduced at council meeting, maybe, you know, someone, if they didn't want to proceed on that basis, they would move not to consider the amendment until the next council meeting. So, but I think that you're, having been on this team, that you would be much more qualified to you know, provide an opinion on what discussion has occurred on that and where it comes out.
Well, I mean, what my recall from the last meeting, which was, and I apologize, I think it was before the ICANN meeting. And I don't know, because I don't recall ever making any sort of decision or recommendation about that, but simply having a discussion about it. And I don't know if this all goes back to whether the amendment was friendly or unfriendly. But the idea is with on the subteam A is that what we've been talking about is where we can facilitate things to become easier or clearer, we would, and we would codify them in writing. And where procedures are working, we would not mess with them. So I'm not sure what you're, in terms of the 48 hours issue. I mean, these are ideas that were being discussed, but certainly not decided. And I would tend to agree that if the working mode of the council now is to be able, at least with friendly amendments, or what someone, and I think that's more to the issue, is the amendment something that's going to facilitate a vote, or is the amendment something that's going to cause more contention? And that's my recollection of the conversation.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Anne.
I don't know if that helps for what you're trying to say here.
Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Rudy. Go ahead.
Yeah, Rudy, for the transcript. Indeed, we had that discussion. I think twice in two meetings we have been discussing about a little bit back and forth on should there be a deadline, should there be time for the council to consider before the council meets on the amendments, and in case an amendment could changes the context of a motion, I think it is important that there is some timing. But at the end, we ended up in floating away from that. But I see Wolf Ulrich has his hand up, and Emma, Wolf Ulrich, you have the floor.
Yeah, thank you, Uli. Wolf Ulrich speaking. I think we are struggling a little bit with regards to the definition question of what is an amendment, what does it mean? And, you know, since in former times, when I was on council, there has never been a discussion about, you know, what does it mean, amendment. So amendment was defined by, let me say, the phrasing of the council member who submitted the amendment. So and was for saying, okay, that's an amendment. So whether it was substantive change of the motion or not. So there was no real definition. So and I think we have the feeling here that that we are discussing along that line, you know, between them both. So is it substantive or not, this change? Does it mean really substance of the motion to be changed? So this is the real question. The only thing where I can see it has been then dealt with is the question, was it accepted as friendly or not? And that could, you know, give a hint, so that it means if it is friendly, then it is not substantive. That's set along that. So my question here is then whether whether we should have a kind of discussion about that, that definition, or whether we should leave it as it used to be in the past and try to find it in practice. Which then would mean, from my point of view, not to put a deadline into, because it happened, from my experience in the past, several times, that amendments came up relatively late to the council, even during the meeting, and they haven't been substantive. So that's my point. So I think we have two options, whether we discuss the definitions or to leave it as it is. Thanks.
This is Lori. I'm sorry, I'm only on the phone, so I don't have the privilege of raising my hand, but if you could put me in the queue, I would appreciate it.
Yes, certainly, Lori. I will put you in the queue. I have Amr in the queue. Amr, you have the floor.
Thanks, Rudy. This is Amr again. I just wanted to clarify that my thinking on this issue is irrespective of whether the amendment is deemed friendly or unfriendly. But my main concern with this is that it has happened in the past where amendments that are considered by at least a part of the council are considered so controversial that councillors have faced a vote on a motion that they really have very little direction from their stakeholder groups or constituencies on as a result of a very late amendment being suggested either during a GNSO council call or a meeting or perhaps in the hours prior to one. That's really all I'm trying to get around here is trying to make it so that the councillors have an opportunity to discuss any amendments that may come up to motions because every group has its own sort of internal process on discussing council meeting agendas, and for example, the non-commercial stakeholder group holds monthly policy calls on the Tuesday before the Thursday of the council call, and that's when all the motions are discussed and so forth, and so amendments that come up very late in the timeline, either for example during a council meeting, in situations like that, the non-commercial stakeholder group councillors don't have an opportunity to discuss those with them. And for example, in one of these situations, like adopting the charter on the cross-community working group on internet governance, one of the thoughts that I had at the time was to defer the motion, but then I really didn't want to do that because there were a lot of people on that group and there were certain circumstances surrounding that group, and the charter wasn't adopted until a great deal of time later than the group was actually formed, and the group was in a hurry to get its charter adopted by the different chartering organizations, and so it wouldn't have been very helpful of me or any of the other councillors to request a deferral of that motion at that time. But you see, this is the sort of scenario that I would hope to avoid, where councillors would sort of be surprised by amendments that they made deem at least worthy of discussion, let's say, even if they're not necessarily controversial, but councillors may need guidance from their groups, and that's really all I'm trying to get around here. Thank you.
Thanks, Amo, for your clarification. And as Mary Wong is mentioning in the chat, it is indeed a difficult situation if you have face-to-face meetings. Requesting, for instance, a 40 hours delay of timing, in practice, that cannot work during the physical meetings. It would be very complex. On the other side, what I'm also considering is that starting categorizing amendments is quite substantial work, especially if you want to link to them condition of delay or minimum deadline required. It's a quite substantial discussion. Lori, you have the floor now.
Yes, I want to recollect, and again, this is I just don't have access now to documents that I normally do on a call. So, but Rudy, can you refresh my memory and maybe the group's memory? We had a writing that we sent to the GNSO Council where we had come to certain conclusions about what may or may not be codified and what may or may not be left alone. And I don't recall that we asked for guidance on this issue. Did we ask for guidance on this issue? There was a letter that went to the council before Marrakesh.
Yeah, thank you, Laurie, really for the transcript. There has been, as far as I remember, there was no official document sent to the council with regards our discussion on the motions and amendments process. There has been
I thought
a presentation
there had been.
Of the status. But I can call on Julie. I see you have your hand up. Can you help us through this?
Hi, yeah, this is Julie Headland. So there were what the SEI submitted to the GNSO Council was a letter prior to the Dublin meeting, and that was addressing the Council's request that the SEI should document the current informal procedure for motions and amendments and seconding motions. And that was the documentation that the SEI produced and submitted to the GNSO Council prior to Dublin. And then after Dublin proceeded to establish the two sub-teams, one dealing with the vice chair and chair elections, and the other one dealing with the procedures relating to motions. And then prior to Marrakesh, both the sub-teams submitted their recommendations for their two issues. In the recommendations that were submitted to the SEI, not to the council, but to the SEI prior to Marrakesh, were the recommendations for how to address, you know, motions, amendments, and seconds. And it was within those recommendations that it was recommended that there would be no deadline for submitting amendments. That report was discussed as the first item of business at the Marrakesh meeting, and there were no changes from the SEI to those recommendations, and there was the task that staff should draft language for a revision to the GNSO operating procedures. I hope that's helpful.
Okay, so this is Laurie chiming in again. I guess this is where my confusion lies. So we had, to my recollection, made recommendations not to change any issues around a deadline, but now this issue is being raised again. I guess that's where my confusion is in terms of what – I feel like I might be not recollecting correctly, but I didn't understand that this is now an issue again. I guess that's where I'm falling in on. And I understand Amr's thinking and what he's asking, but so are we revisiting a question? Is that the point of the comment at this moment? Or is it simply, I thought our task now was to review what would be put down as a written procedure versus what would be left as a custom?
Thank you, Laurie, for your question. And thanks, Julie, for clarifying. I didn't remember we were sending something to the council itself. I made myself the mistake in Marrakesh to say that we were going to report to the council the recommendations, but that was wrong from my side. And I think, Amr, you may clarify what your point is and what you would consider that the SEI would now decide on this point.
Okay, thanks, Rudy. This is Amr. And to just also answer Laurie's question, because I put in the chat here, but I just realized Laurie's not in the Adobe Connect room. This topic was mainly addressed on the sub team that was tasked with working out the details on this, And I do also understand that it was addressed as a first agenda item on the SCI Saturday morning meeting in Marrakesh. And Lori, I apologize. I actually walked into the meeting a few minutes late and missed that discussion.
Yeah, because I was on the call. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and I did miss a couple of minutes, and that was the first agenda item that was discussed. But as I did note before, I did send an email. I believe it was March 23rd, prior to the SCI March 25th meeting, to the SCI list, just raising this point and saying that I would like to discuss it further. And then it became apparent to me afterwards that this was actually discussed in Marrakesh, and I did make apologies, and I repeat my apologies for missing that discussion. But I think that the discussion we're having now is very helpful, and there's a bit of to and fro going on in the chat as well that's helping me see why something like this may be messy. It's just that I wasn't involved in any of these discussions, and I would need to make a more informed decision before a consensus call is made. Thanks and apologies once again, Lori.
No, please don't apologize. I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page with sequencing. That's all.
Thanks, Amar, for your point of view and your clarification. I remember we had that discussion, and at the end we said it's probably too difficult to get this integrated in the process, as we were also considering the physical meetings. I see I have both. Ulrich, you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Thank you, Woody, and thanks, Amar, for clarification. And I have a different point, which is under point 2 of 333.1, the footnote, you know, on the page, you know, at the bottom of the page. If you look at this, footnote number 1 seems to be not in, let me say, in line with the paragraph 3 of that paragraph, you know, where we say that the seconding could be done until the discussion begins, not until the vote is called. So I would like to that Mary and Judy draw your attention to that point, just to clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Wolfgang, for having this eagle eye on this issue. As the text is just above the line, it's not so easy to read. You have to really maximize the view of it. So back to the beginning of our discussion with regards this topic of Subteam A. The text that is in front of us, do we have to read through it, or does someone have already any views on eventually changing text, or can we consider that this text is clear, except for the note where there is indeed a change in the text to be done? I see still Wolf Ulrich, you have your hand up. Is this a new hand or an old? I didn't see it. Okay, fine, thank you.
No, sorry.
No problem. Really for the again. With the text in front of us, I think we should try to go through it in order to be able to validate and make progress. I see, Amar, you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Yeah, thanks again, Rudy. This is Amar. Yeah, at this point right now, I'm not asking that the text be changed. I'm just actually quite happy to be having this discussion. And with what's already been said and with what's going on in the Adobe Connect Room chat, I can see how suggesting a deadline to amendments could be problematic, to say the least. And there's obviously also no synchronized sort of review of council agendas across the different stakeholder groups and constituencies. So even working out a deadline may be challenging if the decision to have a deadline is even made. So like I said, I'm just happy to be having this discussion right now, and I'm not suggesting any changes to the text. I would be happy just the committee just sort of being aware that, you know, that there are potential problems in that arise as a result of suggesting amendments to motions, and really what I'm trying to achieve here is just to sort of avoid scenarios where deferrals of motions become necessary to sort of address some of these amendments. But you know, these are not the majority of amendments that are suggested. Like I said, I only recall two of those situations, scenarios happening over perhaps the past 2.5 years or 3 years. So like I said, I'm just happy to be having this discussion right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Amar, really for the transcript. It's good to come back sometimes to debates and discussions that took place and refresh memories. Sometimes it can change people's vision on items. And I think if you could eventually tell us that in those cases, the amendments that came up late have influenced decision and delayed decision-taking in the council, because to my personal view, it is important that when things come to the council for being voted, that there is no delay on that decision, in so that we don't get stuff delayed and not having taken the right decision at the right time. So I don't know if you remember that such a case happened. Sorry. Next step in the process would be, in this case, that we go for a consensus vote on the proposed text. Amr, what I was just asking was the fact that, as you mentioned, there were two cases where there was late amendments coming up and influenced maybe the discussion, but did they delay the decision taking at that moment? Because then it could be important to eventually add a note to the recommendation that should be considered in case it happens.
Rudy, this is Amar. Thanks for the question, and thank you for repeating it. The two instances that I recalled were amendments were problematic, did not cause any delays or deferral of the motions. They were voted on during those same meetings. Well, I guess you could say they caused delays because there was extended discussion on them as a result of the amendments, but that's to be expected, and maybe expected even of amendments that are considered friendly. But no deferrals were certainly made. But in at least one of those, one of those scenarios, the one on the mutually subsequent procedures PDP, I personally did not think much of the amendment, but I didn't think it was problematic one way or the other. But I specifically recall in the second one, the one on the cross-community working group for internet governance, I recall that the amendment was quite problematic. And I thought at the time that the right thing to do would be to defer the motion. And I was actually considering doing that. But then I also thought of the number of colleagues that I have in the non-commercial stakeholder group were involved with this group and were quite eager to see the charter get adopted. And I sort of made a judgment call at that point to not defer the motion. Up until now, I mean, there were some of our members who were upset with my decision. There were others who were not. But like I said, I had very little guidance from the NCSG on the amendments. No guidance, actually. And then that's sort of where this is all coming from. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Amr, really for the transcript. And it's good to have that explanation and feelings and experiences that you as a counselor went through. It can help in having the right decision taken now and not just left off an issue that that is too important to be considered. So back to the text we have in front of us, can I call for a consensus vote on the text that Julie and Mary has been drafting for us and is in front of us on, except for Lori. Can we go for a consensus vote on the proposed text? In case there is no objection, I would like to... yes, Amar? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, the consensus call will take place on the email list. Sorry for making a mistake here, but I wanted to know if the text is okay and that we can, in fact, start the consensus vote on the mailing list. With, of course, the correction of the footnote, as Walt Ulrich has been mentioning. So, with that, I can consider that the issue of the sub-team A is taken care of, and we can move over to the second case we have on the table that was handled by sub-team B, the chair and vice chair elections. I have seen a mail coming in today with some information and additional comments from Wolf Ulrich, and maybe I can give the floor to the person who chaired the sub-team B and give some eventual clarification on what is proposed.
Thanks. Yeah, Rudy, this is Anne, and I guess really Wolf Ulrich and I have been kind of co-chairing sub-team B. The last meeting we had, Wolf Ulrich was on a train, and he was able to participate, I think, in chat, but not verbally. I think our remaining issues are somewhat limited. Essentially, our sub-team has identified four possible scenarios for getting through the process where a chair is not conclusively elected at GNSO Council meeting. For those on the call who've not been involved in these discussions or following them, it may be important to recap the work of the sub-team. In the situation where no chair is conclusively elected, scenario one is the simplest case. It's where both vice chairs are continuing on the council, and the simplest solution there is that the two vice chairs will jointly oversee the chair election and conduct any council business until such time as a new chair is elected. Then in scenario two, and here I'm just presenting the general scenarios, not the issues that remain to be resolved. In scenario two, council chair is not conclusively elected, but one vice chair is continuing on council while the other vice chair is the term is ending. And so that we proposed in our last meeting that where there's a vacant vice chair seat, that the house that has the vacant vice chair seat should be allowed to appoint someone to interim vice chair during that time, and we'll talk a little bit more about that one later. In scenario three, where a council chair is not elected in the first round and there are two vice chair openings because the two vice chairs, neither of them is continuing on council, the suggestion was that each house would then appoint an interim vice chair to oversee the council chair election and to conduct council business until a council chair is elected. We do also need to talk a bit more about the time frames for that and the eligibility for that, and I'll come back to that. Scenario four is where neither of the two vice chairs is continuing on the council, but the houses fail to designate interim vice chairs in a timely manner, as they are called to do under the draft provisions for scenario three. And in that case, because the council has to be able to continue to conduct business, has to be able to proceed to a conclusive election of a chair, what we would call the sort of neutral last-ditch option is that the non-voting NCA would then assume the role of acting, I think we said act interim chair, yes, to oversee council business. And it was also observed by a couple of our sub-team members that this last-ditch option four would, in fact, encourage the houses to make their interim vice chair appointments in a timely fashion. So those are the scenarios that we considered. I think that a couple of issues have been raised that we should discuss. I'd like to hold for a bit later the issue that Wolf Ulrich raised regarding what happens if no council chair is elected in the second round of voting. And let's look first at our perhaps simpler questions in relation to scenario two, which is posted up in Adobe, but for Lori and others, what we had talked about in scenario two, which is a reminder, is the scenario where one vice chair seat is vacant because there's no continuing vice chair on that side in that house. And the two options, again, were that only the remaining vice chair oversees the chair election and conducts council business. But IPC had proposed that the house with the vacant vice chair position designate an interim vice chair to join the continuing vice chair to oversee chair election and conduct council business. And it was discussed in our last meeting that if this option were chosen based on a consensus in SCI, that there should be a time limit for doing so, so as to not slow down council business. The three suggestions for that time limit to designate the interim vice chair were either 10 calendar days following a council meeting at which a chair was not conclusively elected, 14 calendar days following the council meeting at which no chair was conclusively elected, or 1 week prior to the next scheduled GNSO council meeting. So I think rather than express my own opinion on this, I'll call on Wolf Ulrich, who has recently commented in the chat, I think his opinion that 14 calendar days is the most appropriate. And so, Wolf Ulrich, would you be able to comment on that?
Thank you, and thank you for clarification. Well, I was checking through all the alternatives, and I'm okay with all the alternatives with regards to the deadline. And I was just checking, thinking about usually we have this this habit after the ICANN meeting to, I think, to have 1 week more or less off business, or at least off meetings and of this thing. Then I was just counting, you know. An ICANN meeting normally ends at Thursday, so 10 days is until the end of the following week. So that was I was thinking, should something happen here in the following week where people are still traveling or so question mark, for you know, that was just my thinking about that, and therefore I came up with 14 days. I can't remember a council meeting taking place after the annual, it's the AGM, the annual general meeting, to take place before 4 weeks. So I didn't see any problem with that. But that was just my thinking, and I'm open also to other arguments. Thank you.
Thanks, Wolf Lorris. Just to clarify, Rudy, did you want me to chair this part of the meeting, or did you want me just to present?
Thank you, Anne. Well, I think it's better if you can chair it, because you have been on that subject all the time. I'm just looking through the text, and there is quite a lot of stuff that needs some,
okay,
some clarification. You see,
okay,
the hands in the Adobe, I suppose.
Yes, I was going to call on Mary, but I just want to confirm with you that you wanted me to chair this section of the meeting. So go ahead, Mary.
Thanks, Anne, and thanks, Wolf Ulrich, and everybody. So Julie and I were looking through the operating procedures as part of the prep for this call, and we came across two places where there are deadlines or timelines that may be relevant to this discussion, 10 days, 14 days, etc. The first is probably a bit more relevant, and it actually is a provision that requires that a full 12-month calendar of meetings for the GNSO Council be prepared for the following year after each annual general meeting. So that's supposed to be done by the chair and the staff. And so basically this is one job that the new chair would have to discharge quite early on in his or her tenure. And the stated deadline there is 30 days. The other is something that those of you who are on the previous incarnation of the SCI will no doubt remember, is this process for doing a vote outside a meeting. And that can be called by the chair, the GNSO chair, and there's a few other conditions, but the notice there is 7 days in advance. The reason why I say the first is more relevant is because, you know, we have a 30-day period, so having, you know, one or two vice chairs or interim chairs may or may be something that the council would prefer. I mean, the second one, we agree with Wolf Ulrich that a lot of these things are probably would not be scheduled for right after an ICANN meeting, just given travel and the need for people to get back to their daily lives. But we thought we would raise both of them for your consideration. Thank you.
Mary, before I move on to Lawrence, this is Anne again for the transcript. May I ask, with respect to both of these rules that Julie, you and Julie have identified, is one of these three options then the preferable option with respect to those rules?
Anne, this is Mary again. We didn't form an opinion about that. We just wanted to bring it up to the extent that, you know, weighing all the pros and cons and the practicalities that Wolf Ulrich has noted, whether it would therefore be preferable to do 10 days rather than 14. So we don't really have an opinion about that. We just wanted to raise what we thought were relevant considerations.
Okay, thanks, Mary. I'm not sure I fully understand those. You know, it makes sense based on the experience that you and Wolf Ulrich have to default to the 14 calendar days, I think. But I'd like to recognize Lawrence for any comments he may have here. Lawrence?
Thank you. This is Lawrence for the records. I'm in tune with the 14 days. Actually brought that up because that information was provided to us that the election is usually after the AGM and there will be people traveling. So there's going to be need to settle down. And because there is also a time frame for the elections to be held, it's healthy that there's also enough time to coordinate activities towards a by-election of some sort. And so putting it right at 14 days will give maybe another 14 days or so to prepare for the process of a new election. But right after that discussion, that's the last SCI meeting we had, looking through the process, something new jumped in my head. I don't know if I want to put that on the table so that we can as well discuss this as we look at this scenario. Now, if there is a failure of an election, we have proposed these four scenarios, and we are very clear with scenario one. The other scenarios is just the timing for that. It now occurred to me we have 30 days after a failed election to put in place some form of mechanism to produce another election. If in the event that we didn't have the vice chairs continuing, we also have these provisos. But then it occurs to me we're going to have to get the House the House now where a vice chair is not sitting to provide one. What happens if that House for some reasons cannot maybe meet this deadline? We now move to the next scenario. I mean, there has to be a next scenario, so to say. So what I'm saying in essence is within the timeline of 2 weeks could either work within a 30-day scenario or a 60-day scenario. I hope I'm not confusing us. For clarity, let me go on. If there is no vice chair coming from both houses, or if for any reason both houses decide not to meet the requirement or cannot meet the requirement of providing a representative within our 10 day or 14 days on 1 week deadline, what happens? It means that we get stuck at that particular point. So if we are working with, if we can't meet scenario one and we move to scenario two, we have one vice chair and we now adopt that maybe a House that doesn't have a vice chair should nominate a vice chair to join the sitting one. And at the end of the day, that election still remains inconclusive. Does it mean that we're now going to be moving to a scenario three? At what point do we get each of these different scenarios to work? So if we can't get the House to provide two vice chairs, two interim vice chairs to help conduct an election, after a 14-day period, for instance, can we then have a proviso immediately allow for the non-voting non-com appointee to then conduct the election still within the same 30-day framework? I think I'll drop off now so that in case we have other views or in case I've succeeded in confusing us better, not to confuse us any longer. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Lawrence, and I appreciate the question that you're proposing, and I think it undoubtedly does need to be clarified. This had actually occurred somewhat to me as well in the interim. I think that in the case where a House fails to appoint a vacant vice chair position and fails to appoint an interim vice chair, there would be two options. One option would be for us to provide that where that House fails or else that House does not meet the deadline, assuming it's for the moment that it's 14 calendar days, that either we could move to scenario four, where the non-voting NCA acts as interim chair, or we could provide that a House that fails to timely appoint an interim vice chair has to live with the only existing interim vice chair who is either there because that person's term continues or is there because that House, in fact, did timely appoint their vice chair. So those would be, I think, the two options and probably need to be, you know, specified and discussed as to which option we see as more practical or appropriate. And so I'll call on Amer to see what comments he may have on that. Thank you, Amer. Go ahead.
Thanks, Sam. This is Amer. Yeah, I pretty much agree to everything you just said. The way I'm reading these scenarios is that in scenario one and two, there actually is no problem because there is no vacancy. In scenario one, we have two continuing counselors who can continue in the role as interim vice chairs as opposed to elected vice chairs and, just until new council leadership is elected. In scenario two, we're missing one of those two, but we still have one. So in the event that the other House fails to appoint an interim vice chair, we still have one. The council still has one to work with. It's really scenario three where it starts to get a bit messy because there's a completely vacant leadership. We don't have either of the two vice chairs, and the council has failed to elect a chair. So in this situation, in the event that the two houses fail, both houses fail to appoint interim vice chairs, then automatically within a set period of time, which we haven't decided on yet, we would move forward to scenario four, where the non-voting NCA could be designated as the interim chair until the council manages to get its act together, actually. I think it works out quite nicely, and I hope that the council never finds itself in a position like this, at least never finds itself in a position where they're forced to deal with scenario three and four. Scenario one and two may happen, but I hope will also be unlikely in the future. I would like to add one more thing, one comment I had when I was looking over the language in these scenarios. We did discuss in the past and decided against the including of the non-voting, non-com appointee in scenario three. And as you can see on the document on the screen, it's been crossed out. I was wondering if it would be helpful to change this language instead of I'm looking at scenario three, the second paragraph under suggestion, where it says, note, in the case where both vice chairs' terms on the council end at the same time as the chair and no chair is conclusively elected, this procedure would apply. Each house should designate a new or continuing counselor, which may include the voting NCAs to temporarily fill the role of vice chair on an interim basis. And it goes on. I was wondering, replacing the language here, which begins with each house should designate a new or continuing counselor, which may include the NCAs, to just replace which may include the NCAs to from within the respective houses. I believe that language is consistent with the bylaws language that Julie brought up during the last SCI call, and it also, I think, removes some ambiguity regarding the non-com appointees' eligibility to be appointed by either of the two houses, because I think what we're intending to say here is that
Amer, I think we lost you. Okay. So I see that we're actually out of time, and I think that one thing that's clear here, I believe there's an additional meeting necessary for this sub-team. I do see personally at least three issues that need further discussion. I don't think that the language that Amr was citing in scenario two would mean that automatically only one vice chair would continue. I think the team still has to discuss whether the recommendation is that we continue with just the one vice chair or whether we default to scenario four with a non-voting NCA. And so I don't think, you know, I do think Lawrence has raised a question that must be addressed. I think that the open issue exists in relation to scenario two and three. What happens if one house does not timely appoint? Where do we go? Do we go to the other house's vice chair, or do we go to the non-voting NCA scenario? That needs further discussion by this team. The second thing is the suggestion just made by Amr with respect to a change in the language. I personally, it looks like a good change to me, but I don't think that on this call we have adequate time to develop a consensus on that. And then the third issue, which I think is still quite important, that Wolf Ulrich has identified, is what happens if the second round of voting doesn't result in conclusively in a council chair. So I would suggest to staff that we do need another call for sub-team B on those three agenda items. We could also do it as a full SCI call if everyone would prefer to approach it that way. May I ask those on the call to, if you agree that this should be a full SCI discussion, could you click agree? Okay. I'm seeing Wolf Ulrich says yes, yes, yes. I'm seeing several full SCI discussion, and I'm going to go ahead and agree with that myself. So if we could put that on the agenda for the next SCI meeting, and I think also at the time we'll probably want to try to reconfirm some consensus on this 14 calendar days alternative as well. I didn't hear any objection to that, but you know, we didn't really finalize it. So I'd like to, at this point, turn the meeting back over to Rudy as chair with hopefully just our identification that this one is not yet ready for consensus call. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Anne, for chairing this part. Rudy, for the transcript. Yeah, I think it's important as we, on the SC, the sub-team A finished its work. So there is no need for having two teams working separately. I would like to have the full house here having a view on elaborating furthermore on the text. I see, Julie, you have your hand up. You have the floor.
Sorry, I took it down.
No problem. So let's put it on the agenda for the next SCI meeting. I was just wondering, when should we have that call? I just recall that we have the on the mail, the consensus vote that would take at least 2 weeks. Should we schedule a call in 3 weeks' time so that we can handle the results of the consensus call and take care of this second issue? Is that a good proposal? Yeah, I see. I'm saying it sounds good. So can we schedule this within 3 weeks from now? As I see, Julia typing in the notes window, the 21st of April. 18 UTC, is that okay for everyone? Laurie, is that okay for you too, as you're on the phone and not on the bridge here?
I think it should be, really. I'll still be in Europe, so yes.
Okay, thank you very much. So with that, I will conclude this this meeting, call it to an end, and thank you all for your participation. It was very fruitful. We made progress. If we can next call get the other issue at the end, then we will probably be happy and have some delay for further discussion. So thank you all, and see you on the 21st of April.
Thanks, Rudy. Be well, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.